Cliff Branch joins us on Sports Byline, the former wide receiver for 14 seasons in the National Football League with the Oakland and Los Angeles Raiders, and he had 501 career receptions with 67 TDs, and he won three titles, one in Super Bowl 11, 15, and 18. And Cliff, you played your college ball at Colorado, where you set the NCAA record for kickoff returns for touchdowns with 8. How did you end up at Colorado?
Well, growing out of the state of Texas and in Houston, so what happened, segregation was still going on. So the schools at the Southwest Conference and the schools in the Southeastern Conference still wasn't recruiting black athletes. You know, you're talking about the LSU, the Alabamas, you know, the Texas Longhorns, you know, Rice, TCU and SMU, stuff like that. So when I got a chance to went on a recruiting trip to the University of Colorado, I loved it. And it was a chance to play in the Big Eight at the time because, you know, the Pac-8, the Big Eight, and the Big Ten were recruiting black athletes. So that was the decision I made because integration hadn't really been developed in the South yet.
Let me ask you a question. You grow up in Houston. You grow up in Texas. You know you have talent. And you probably would like to play college football close to home so your friends and family could see you. How angry did that make you, or how did you feel not being able to play in the state of Texas?
Well, I was disappointed, you know what I mean, because I really did like the Southwest Conference, and I really liked my team in the Southwest Conference in those days over the University of Arkansas because they threw the football, you know. The Texas Longhorn was still, you know, with Dale Rar was still running the ball, pretty much wasn't throwing it. But you had the University of Arkansas, you know, with Lance Allward at the University of Arkansas. So I really followed Lance Allward quite a bit, and I love the fact that they threw the football. So that would have been my choice if I had an opportunity to go play in the Southwest Conference. Been to the University of Arkansas.
I know you were a standout track and field athlete as well. You set the NCAA championship record in the 100 meters with a time of 10 seconds flat at the 72 NCAA championship semifinals. I've talked to football players that also participated in track and field, and they talked about the benefit, the crossover benefit. What was it for you? What was it out of track and field that helped you in football?
Well, I think the biggest difference was the individuality of running track and field, you know what I mean? I was a specialist in the 100 meters. I was a specialist in the 200 meters. So I think those were the big advantage, being an individual athlete in track and field.
Also, you had the dream of participating in the 72 Olympic Games, but, of course, since you were going to become a professional football player, that kind of negated that as well. Did you have to wrestle with that? Was that a hard decision for you?
Well, I did qualify for the United States Olympic trials. But when I got drafted by the Oakland Raiders, it was a dream come true to be able to go to the Oakland Raiders. And they were, in those days, were always been a prolific passing team with the Dial of Monica's, the Jarvis Blanders, and then they had Warren Wells, and then Hickey, you can go play with Raymond Chester and Fred Belinka. So there was an opportunity, man, to learn from some great, great, great pass receiving men. And so there was no hesitation after I got drafted to forfeit going to compete in the Olympic trials.
What did you know about Al Davis?
Didn't know anything about Al Davis at all. Didn't really know too much about the Oakland Raiders, you know, because growing up, tell you the truth, I really followed the Kansas City Chiefs because Otis Taylor went to my high school. Otis Taylor was my high school first quarterback, so I really followed Otis Taylor with the Kansas City Chiefs and stuff like that. So I was a big Kansas City Chiefs fan because of Otis Taylor. And then when I got drafted by the Raiders, started looking at their history of their organization, I said, oh, my God. Here I'm going to an organization that's competing every year for the division title, competing to go in the championship game, and it had already played in the Super Bowl before, and every year they were knocking on the door to go to the Super Bowl. I say, I am so lucky and so blessed to go to an organization that believes in winning.
Yeah, what struck you the most about Al when you finally did meet him and some of the early conversations you had with him? Because, you know, so much has been said and written about Al. I got to know him here when I came down to the Bay Area in 1977, and I always felt it was kind of unfair. He had a style about him. There was no doubt about it. But really, he was a football man through and through. And if you happen to be a player, that's what you were looking for.
Yes, no question about it. I remember when Tom Flores came out to he was going to be my receiver coach for the Raiders, and he came out and spent a whole week with me during my senior year, and I was still competing, getting ready for the NCAA track and field championship and stuff like that. So he spent the whole week with me, giving me an education, the way the Raiders do things on players running pass pattern, running the releases they want you to do to set up individual routes and stuff like that. So I spent a whole week with him. And then that Saturday, Al Davis flew in. I got to meet Al. I think I worked out with him for about 5 minutes. And I was just telling Coach Fleur, I said, I ran a couple of routes and ran a couple of up patterns and out patterns and then worked out for like 5 minutes. And Al said he saw enough. And I turned around to Coach Fleur. I said, well, how do you spent a whole week with me and we went through everything. And he comes, he flies in from Oakland, California, spends 5 minutes with me, and then we go up and watch the University of Colorado highlight film of my season and stuff like that. And then he had saw enough. I said, how do you evaluate? But, you know, Al was a very sharp man about non-talent, man. And whatever he saw, I am glad what he believed in. My future as a receiver for the Raiders, because I tell you what, he was right on it.
Cliff, as you know, in sports, every team has its own culture. It has its own image. And, of course, the Raiders have always had a very unique image. Tell me a little bit about how that culture was developed and what it was like during the years you played with them for 14 years.
Well, the Raiders were kind of a group of men that was led by John Madden as the coach. And he only had a few rules. I mean, he believed in being on time for meetings, pay attention for meetings when you had meetings, and go like hell on Sunday. But he believed in giving the players, treated them like men, and gave the players a lot of rope. So he established one thing: if you come prepared when you're in meeting, pay attention, and then you go like hell on Sunday, I'm going to give you a lot of rope to still be a man. And I think that was the biggest culture that he established, that we're going to teach you very fairly. We just like want you to play hard on Sundays and pay attention in meetings and stuff like that. So that spread it, that trickled down to a lot of players, that they were very fair and they were going to treat you like men, and you're going to get a lot of respect long as you do your job.
You know, it's very interesting because I think you know the cliches, you play like you practice, and also the fact that discipline is such an important part in team chemistry. And yet the Raiders gave off that image, like you said, about, you know, they were a wild bunch. There's no doubt about it. You mentioned about being on time and everything. Of course, being in by curfew, that was a rule, too, that was probably not adhered to very much, was it?
Well, I tell you, Ron, I mean, I remember the next day after we was in training camp in Santa Rosa, and then first thing he walks in the meeting, he said, "Guys, we check curfews at 11 o'clock," and the next thing you know, we hear the cars leaving at 11:15. He said, "Guys, can you at least wait till 11:30 before you start leaving and stuff?" That's kind of ship they ran. I mean, they just had a very loose organization because they know the Raiders had a lot of great players on the team, and they know they're going to play hard on Sunday, but they didn't mind you missing curfew because they know when it's time to go to work, you're going to go to work.
We got about 30 seconds before we have to break here, Cliff, and I'm just wondering, what was the glue that kept that team together for so many years, meaning that allowed them to play the way they played?
Well, I think the leadership of Gene Upshaw that and always sharing with the players and the teammates is that we're gonna practice real hard, but we believe in camaraderie. When practice is over, we want us to get together every Wednesday and every Thursday and have camaraderie as a group. And so I think that was the biggest thing when Upshaw demanded that we have camaraderie, that we do things off the field along with practicing together. We want to do things off the field after practice was over.
Cliff Branch is with us, wide receiver in the NFL for 14 seasons, all in a Raiders uniform, and he has 3 Super Bowl championship rings to prove it. We'll talk more about his outstanding career as we continue on Sports Byline. Cliff Branch has joined us here on Sports Byline USA. You mentioned about John Madden. You played for 2 head coaches, John Madden first and then Tom Flory second. And Madden was the youngest coach in the National Football League at 32. And I think you know when you have a coach that is the same age maybe of some of your players, respect is kind of a tough thing to get from those guys. Tell me a little bit about how he earned your respect, meaning the team's respect.
Well, I think how he earned the respect is the fact that, you know, when he spoke, he was very serious. And then he turned around and laughed about it, you know what I mean? So he had a serious tone about himself, but he also had a great sense of humor in his approach. And I think that's the biggest key about John Madden, being serious, but also know how to take the gas off the pedal and have a sense of humor about his approach.
Now, I've heard a lot of stories, and of course, being that young, the players, well, you know how those players were with the Raiders. Did they tape him to a goalpost one time?
I think that did happen in one training camp, you know what I mean? You know, they did tape John to a goalpost, and he wasn't very happy about it, but I tell you, he was a red-headed guy, you know what I mean, and his face got all red, but after a few minutes, he let the guys continue to tape him to the post. Okay, he said, okay, this is over now. Get this tape off of me very quickly. So as fast as we got it on him, we had to remove it just as fast.
And one of the free spirits, if I'm not mistaken, was the linebacker, the Stork, was he not?
Ted Hendricks,
right. He had a he walked and played to the beat of a different drum, did he not?
Oh, he had one of the true personalities of the Raider organization, you know what I mean? You know, the big bad Raiders and stuff like that, and then you got a guy that's one of the tallest man and one of the finest football players on the Raider organization, Ted Hendricks, because he was a totally jokester, man, during training camp. You know, because here you go on training camp in those days were 6 weeks long compared to 2 weeks like it is today. So we were in training camp for 6 weeks long, playing 6 weeks, 6 preseason games. So you were away in training camp for a long period of time. So it could get very monotonous, and Ted Hendricks would pull off some of the funniest wisecrack that an individual could ever think of. I mean, I remember one time he came into training camp. We just started practice. So he rode in on his horse, man. And John said, "What the hell is going on?" And Ted said, "Well, coach, I mean, we're gonna be here for six weeks. You know, we got to have a change of pace a little bit. So I thought I'd ride in on a horse today."
Who were some of the other jokesters on that team, and what are some of the other antics that you can share with me?
Well, I mean, Ted was the lead of all the antics. You know what I mean? You know, I remember we would always have our annual air hockey tournaments. We would always have our annual rookie party and stuff like that. And so the rookies would be the main jokes of the team because we'd have to get up and you know, stand on the table and then watching sing your school song and stuff like that. So it was hard on rookies, but I tell you what, it was very much worth it because that's the part of the camaraderie the Raider organization always had.
And then after, of course, John Madden, you had Tom Flores. His personality was quite different. It was really low-keyed, but he really had the tradition because he played for the Raiders. He also, you know, was a coach with the Raiders, as you said. Tell me a little bit about how that worked with the team.
Well, again, Tom Flores was the first Raider after I got dropped by the Raiders in 1972. Tom came out and spent a whole week with me. He was going to be my receiver coach. And it was his first year on the coaching staff of the Raiders, too. So he came in my first year, and he became the receiver coach. And I tell you what, I learned a lot from Tom. One of the first quarterbacks, him and Cotton Davison of the Oakland Raiders, piloted through the first touchdown pass in the history of the Raiders to Art Powell and stuff like that. But he had been around the Raiders many years, you know, played with Kansas City Chiefs and stuff and got a Super Bowl ring. And then, you know, all the years he was with the Raiders. But just a fine coach. I owe a lot to Tom Flores today.
You know, you think about Tom Flores, you know, a Hispanic man, a quarterback, and you know as well as I do because I've talked to some of the early quarterbacks in professional football who said that there was the belief that an African-American could not play a skill position like quarterback. You talked about what it was like down in the state of Texas where you could not play in that state. Well, what was the racial sensitivity, if there was any, at that particular time? Because the culture in this country was totally different as well. But what was it like for you and for the professional African-American athlete at that time in pro ball?
Well, I didn't really feel that effect when I came in. I remember early before I got there, and they had an all-star game. The AFL was having an all-star game. I heard Willie Brown and Gene Upshaw talk about it. They had an all-star game, and it was going to be in the city of New Orleans. So when the players flew in from the different teams, you know, from the different AFL teams, flew into New Orleans, and they had the housing set up. So some of the housing hotels in New Orleans said that the black players couldn't stay in the hotel. I remember Upshaw and Willie Brown telling me about this. And he said that was an issue right there. And then the white players were all supportive because here they're in town to play an all-star game. And then now you want to divide the players from staying in the main hotel to a different hotel. So they decided they were going to boycott the game. And then Al Davis stepped up and said, no, we're not going to boycott the game. We're going to move the game to Houston because of the situation in New Orleans. And so they end up moving the game to Houston and played the All-Star game in Houston because of that situation, because of the segregation part of at the hotel situation in New Orleans prior to the All-Star game.
You mentioned about the AFL, and you didn't play in the AFL. You were in the NFL the whole time. But I know that the AFL had great influence on the way the game changed in the established NFL. Tell me a little bit about how that did affect the game played in the NFL.
Well, the league was one league at that particular time when I came into the
right.
72 and stuff like that. So now you had – some of the NFL teams like the Steelers, the Baltimore Colts, coming over to the AFC side, you know, because they were originally NFC teams and stuff like that. So Baltimore came over, Pittsburgh came over. So those teams were now, who long-standing been in the NFL, wasn't going to be in the NFC now. They were going to be in the American Football Conference. So you had those teams that were very valuable to make the league very strong, so they split some of the teams and brought them to the AFC. So I think that was the biggest difference.
You know, the other thing too is that the AFL, when it was established and going on, it was a wide open league. I mean, they passed the ball all over the field, whereas the old NFL was just kind of a grinded out league. And I remember in those early days when they combined the two leagues, it was evident the effect that the AFL had and really changed the game in my mind. Did you get that same sense?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, because, you know, the American Football League had man-to-man coverage. There was no zone. There was a lot of passing like it is today. And so, you know, he talking about Jarvis Blandon when he was with the Houston Oilers, man. I mean, he was throwing the ball 50 times a game to Bill Grohman and Charlie Hannigan and Billy Cannon and stuff like that. So he was doing that stuff that they're doing today way back in the American Football League.
How long did it take you to really blend into the Raiders and feel comfortable with playing at that level of competition?
Well, it happened very fast because I was the fourth round draft choice of the Raiders that year, and then we took Mike Siani from Villanova as the number one draft choice, and then so we only kept the two, me, Mike Siani, and Fred Belinikar. We only had three wide receivers that kept on the team that year. So me and Mike Siani was going to get educated, playing very quickly and very fast. So we got educated and got on the field very quickly.
We are talking football with a man that distinguished himself for 14 seasons in professional football, all in the NFL. He was the fourth-round draft choice out of the University of Colorado, and what a talent he was. I'm talking about Cliff Branch, and he won three Super Bowl championships, Super Bowl XI, Super Bowl XV, and Super Bowl XVIII. And when we come back, we're going to talk about those Super Bowls and about some of his other teammates as well. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show. Cliff Branch has joined us here on Sports Byline USA. He had 501 career receptions, 67 TDs, and three Super Bowl championships. You mentioned Fred Biletnikoff's name, and I've known Freddie for a long time. I'm going to make a statement. Tell me if I'm right or wrong about this, but somebody like a Fred Biletnikoff, who is a possession receiver, complimented somebody like a Cliff Branch, and that was part of the success of the passing game of the Oakland Raiders.
Well, when I first came in the league, and we had Mike Siani and me and Fred Biletnikoff, and so me and Mike Siani shared time on the other side opposite Freddie. And I tell you what, you know, when I came in the league, Freddie was not a possession receiver. He was a possession receiver. But he could get deep. You know, I played 7 years with Freddie, and he played a total of 14 years, too. So he was in his late 20s, may have been around 30 when I came in the league. And so Freddie still was going deep. He was still giving Jimmy Marcello from the Kansas City a lot of trouble. And they had some very vicious individual wars because of the Raiders and the Kansas City Chiefs was always battling for the division championship. So I saw Freddie in the early years of his career, and he was not a possession receiver. Freddie could get deep, he could get to the corner, and he was more than a possession receiver. As I developed and Mike Sammy developed, then we started getting the double coverage, the double coverage, because Freddie was getting the double coverage, but he became a more of a possession receiver because I had me and Mike Siani on the other side, who had pretty good speed, and I had world-class speed. So it took away from Freddie getting the double coverage as we develop and stuff like that. But early in Freddie's career, he could get deep, I tell you. He was more than just a possession receiver.
Well, thank you for clearing that up, because all I've ever heard about Freddie was that he was a possession receiver, and you really cleared that up for me. Thank you very much. When the leagues combined and it became the National Football League, a lot of people thought that the NFC East was the power division and everything. But I'm going to tell you something. I think that the AFC West, with the rivalries that came into the league with the merger of the AFL and the NFL, I've never seen a division that had the rivalries. Tell me a little bit about how those rivalries developed, and were they as good as I thought they were?
Yes, they were. I mean, when I came in the league, it was for our division, and the AFC West, it was always the Raiders and the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
Battling for the division. You know, I remember when we would be preparing for Kansas City, and it was Kansas City week, and then back in Kansas City, they would say it's Raider week. So I remember preparing for Kansas City. It's my rookie year, and there's a plane flying over the field. John Madden and Al Davis looked up, I swear to God, Hank Stram has got somebody spying on our practice that week. So that's how paranoid Al Davis and John Madden would get, because our facility was out at the Oakland Airport. And so that week, it would always be a plane flying over Kansas City week. And I swear to God, Al Davis and John Madden look up there and say, Hank Stram is up there filming our practice. And so that's how paranoid we were, because Kansas City Chiefs was always the biggest week, because we were always battling whoever win between those two games. I was going to win the division. So it was always a big week preparing for Kansas City Chiefs.
What about the rivalry with Denver and also with San Diego? Because I remember them being some really exciting games as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, when I first came in, you had John Hadle and Lance Allworth, and those guys were giving Willie Brown and a lot of hell. Because, I mean, they just – I remember saying – Bambi Lance Allworth was unstoppable. I mean, they would play man to man coverage, and Dave Grayson and Willie Brown, Dave Grayson would be the free safety and Willie would be the corner, and they always had to double Lance Allworth, and he was still beating double coverage back in those days. So with John Hale and Lance Allworth, you know what I mean, they were throwing the ball quite a bit. Denver was still not. Denver was still on the bottom of the division, so they had the great Claude Little and stuff like that. So wasn't as potent as they were later on, and when they got the Elway thing going on and stuff like that. But you're talking about, you know, with Lenny Dawson and Otis Taylor and Buck Buchanan and Bobby Bell and with Kansas City Chiefs, and then you got the San Diego Chargers with John Hale and Lance Allworth. Those were some very tough division games during those days in the 70s.
Let's talk about the three Super Bowls. Your first one was Super Bowl number 11. You beat Minnesota 32-17. What was significant about that game to you?
Well, confidence. We were in four straight championship games. We played the Dolphins the year they went 17-0. We played in a championship game. The following year, we had the best record and played the Steelers in the championship game at home and lost to them because we had knocked off the Dolphins for them to go back and repeat. 75, it was us and the Steelers again in the championship game. So four straight years, we were in the AFC championship game against three straight years against the Steelers, one against the Dolphins. So we finally was able to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers to go to Super Bowl 11, and whoever was winning the championship games in those days, it was always the AFC team, would win the Super Bowl. So we were confident, and we figured it was our time. And when we played in Super Bowl 11, we were very confident. We were 16-1 that year. We started the season over 3-0, lost to New England Patriots, and then won 13 straight weeks without losing a football game, until the crowning glory of winning Super Bowl 11.
Your second Super Bowl ring was in Super Bowl number 15, Raiders beating Philadelphia 27-10. I remember that because I was on the team playing going down to New Orleans. What I will share this story, there was a player on your team who came and got me and said, why don't we go down to Bourbon Street? And it was after the curfew, and so we go down, and it was about 2 o'clock in the morning when we came in. And as we're coming into the team hotel, Tom Flores is coming down the steps down to the lobby. And he says, you do know, he says this to the player, he says, you do know the curfew was 11 o'clock. And he looked up at Tom Flores, and he said, yeah, but Ron couldn't sleep, and we went out to try to find him some warm milk. But you guys beat Philadelphia 27-10, and that was, you know, that team had been worked to death during Super Bowl week by their coach, and they just had nothing in them. You just blew them off the field.
Well, you know, we had played Philadelphia early in the season in a great defensive battle game, and I think the final score was 10-7, and they had sacked Jim Plunkett probably nine times that particular day. But we were confident. We was a wild card team, and we was the first wild card team to play in the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. So we were very confident going into the game, knowing that we had to pass protect, give Jim Plunkett some pass protection, and we did that. And so with that being said, we got the pass protection. Jim Plunkett was MVP of the Super Bowl. He was comeback player of the year, and he took us on a marvelous Cinderella season because we had already traded Kenny Stabler to Houston, brought in Dan Pastorini. Pastorini got hurt after the fifth game of the season, and Jim Plunkett took us on a 9-2 run the rest of the year to the crowning glory. And then I remember when we had got Jim 2 years earlier, you know, he was pretty much washed up thinking about retiring, but, you know, Al Davis could give a guy, he could always rejuvenize a guy when he brought him in, you know what I mean? And that's what he did for Jim. And then Jim got to play with a lot of, he was a talented guy, but now he didn't have to do it all himself. He was able to come in, play with a bunch of talented guys, and then when he got his opportunity, he stepped to the plate and took us on a wonderful journey and winning Super Bowl 15.
Yeah, and that Eagle coach I was referring to was Dick Vermeil. Let's go on to Super Bowl number 18, Raiders beating Washington 38-9. One play right before halftime decided that game, did it not, Cliff?
Without a doubt, the Jack Swire interception.
Yep.
And the thing about the game was very similar. We had played Washington early in the season in a shootout game, and we lost 35-38 or something like that. And then we didn't have Mike Haynes, and so Marcus Allen didn't play. I got hurt after I pulled my hamstring on a 99 NFL record 99-yard touchdown play. So here we get chance to play Washington again with a full strength. We got Mike Haynes now. We got Mike Haynes and Lester Hayes at the corner. We got shut down corners now because, you know, the Redskins led the National Football League for the most points in the history of a team that year. So now we got these shut down corners, and then Marcus Allen was going to be healthy. I'm going to be healthy, and we just totally dominated that game. And just before half, when Squirek intercepted that pass, that put us up 21-0 at halftime. And then it was all the Marcus Allen show the second half. Because boy, did he run wild! He ran so wild, set a Super Bowl record for 170-something yard rushing, 191-yard rushing, or something like that. It was named MVP, and we got out there crowning glory.
We only have about 3 minutes left, and I'd be amiss if I didn't talk to you about the move of the Raiders down to Los Angeles. They had been such a part of the fabric of Oakland for such a long time, and I think a lot of people know the relationship that the fans have with their football team. How hard was that on the players, and how did that affect the team? Because L.A. is certainly not Oakland. Oakland is blue-collar. L.A. is Hollywood.
No question about it. You know, you're talking about playing in the Oakland Coliseum for all those 10 years that I was in Oakland. And there was 50,000 fans, blue-collar fans, sold out every game for the 10 years that I was there. And, you know, now we're going to uproot and go to the L.A. Coliseum and play in the 92,000-seat stadium. And then that particular year that we did that was 1982. So it was the last year training up in Santa Rosa, and we were a road team the whole year because we were still training up in Oakland. We would fly down to L.A. for our home games, play the home game, and then fly right back up to Oakland. So we were on the road the whole time in 1982, and that was a strike-shortened season. We only lost 2 games that year out of 10, and we should have gone to the Super Bowl that particular year. The format was different because now with the strike shortened season, they had 8 teams in the playoffs, and then us and the Washington Redskins were the best teams, and we ended up losing to the Jets the following week after we had beat Cleveland. So it was a very disappointing ending, but it got us right for the following year to come back, even stronger, and it was going to be our first year being down in L.A., housing in L.A. now, living in Los Angeles now, and then we wasn't going to be a road team. We were going to officially be based in Los Angeles instead of playing the games like we did in 82, we just fly down to the games and come back to Oakland. But it took us only 2 years to get a world championship, the first world championship in Los Angeles. Football history was pro team.
Cliff, I want to thank you very much for reminiscing and sharing your memories of the Oakland Raiders, because I was a young sportscaster here in San Francisco when I moved down here from Seattle, and it was just a pleasure to be around you guys. You were gentlemen. You had a personality as a team that I'll never, ever forget. It was really something very special. And so thank you for sharing the memories with me, Cliff.
Ron, it's been a joy to spend the day with you, going over Raider history during my era. And thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
Cliff Branch with us. Again, former wide receiver in the National Football League for 14 seasons with the Oakland and Los Angeles Raiders. He had 500 in career receptions with 67 touchdowns. He won 3 Super Bowl titles. It was Super Bowl number 11 first, and then Super Bowl number 15, and finally Super Bowl number 18. And he's represented by Rob Hempel and National Sports Distributors. And if you're interested in having Cliff appear at an event purchasing memorabilia, or if you'd like more information about Cliff or their clients, all you have to do is contact Rob, and you can get him at nsdsports.com. We continue with more of You and Sports Byline.